Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Tomorrow's Capital. This season, we're focusing on ESG in the capital markets. Does environmental, social, and governance information drive investor engagement, corporate performance, and market efficiency? I've invited a series of guests here to MarketSite to answer that question. My name is Evan Harvey. I'm the Global Head of Sustainability for NASDAQ, and I'll be your guide as we explore this topic with the thought leaders and market influencers and industry titans who are at the vanguard of a changing economic landscape. Joining me today is someone who fits all of those descriptions, Henry Schilling, Director of Research at Sustainable Research. Thanks for joining me, Henry.
My pleasure.
I wanted to start on a topic that you and I have talked about many times, which is the labeling and the language around ESG and sustainability. How do you describe the work that you do? Is it ESG? Is it sustainability? Is it impact? Is it SRI? Do you have a personal definition or understanding that you rely upon?
So, Evan, I think the work that I'm doing encapsulates all of those. When I left Moody's Investors about a year and a half ago, my intention was to develop a platform that would offer independent research, analysis, education, and training for the benefit of investors. And these investors range from individual investors to institutional investors that were interested in achieving both market-based financial returns and at the same time produce a positive economic impact with their investing. And sustainable investing, at least as I thought about it, actually is a term that encapsulates all of the acronyms that you mentioned.
And many more that I probably didn't mention.
And many more, and they continue to evolve. And by that I mean that they incorporate sustainable investing, responsible investing, ethical investing, as well as ESG integration. And my attempt in providing this platform was to accommodate this broad objective on the part of investors. And I know that these terms have specific definitions, and we can go into those definitions as we continue through this discussion. But in the context of that, I launched a website. The website houses this independent research, and I provide this research through the lens of largely mutual funds, ETFs, and individual securities that are available for the benefit of investors in order to achieve their goals.
Interesting. Let's talk about that evolution that you just mentioned. Do you feel like an evolving understanding of ESG in the markets, ESG in the capital markets in particular, has informed your business strategy? You spent many, many years at Moody's developing an analytical platform and a research platform where we're looking at the impact of environmental, social, and governance performance on financial performance and other things. So as we have grown more sophisticated in our analysis and as our understanding of ESG's impact on capital market direction has grown, has it affected, I mean, obviously you've changed careers a little bit, has it changed your understanding of the business opportunity?
Well, what I would say is first off, it's important to define some of the terms that we've already referenced. ESG in particular, the context within which I think about ESG is ESG integration. ESG integration, and using a CFA definition, is defined by me to mean the consistent and systematic accounting for environmental, social, governance risks and opportunities in the assessment of creditworthiness, in the assessment of valuation, where these factors are relevant and material.
I think that for most people, ESG represents a distinction from the more vague term sustainability. ESG is clearly focused on data, KPIs, metrics that indicate specific performance measures, whereas sustainability is more of a vague term indicating a preparedness for the long term.
Well, sustainability takes that into consideration, but I think sustainability in the way that it's used today also encapsulates such concepts as values-based investing, investing that is intended to achieve social, ethical, moral, maybe religious objectives, and typically that strategy is executed through an exclusionary approach.
I will divest from a company that is violating my norms, my ethical norms.
Correct, if I'm already invested in those, or I will avoid investing in such companies or sectors in the future. There is also another strategy that is encapsulated in that term, and that is thematic investing or impact investing. Thematic investing would be a form of investing where I'm focusing on a particular area. It might be renewable energy. It might be
water. It could be
water,
social
clean
good.
Water, exactly. And green bonds, I think, investing in green bonds would fall into that category because the proceeds from the issuance of the green bonds are dedicated to achieving some environmental benefit. So in my estimation, at least, it falls into that category. But I wouldn't necessarily link that with impact investing, which attempts to achieve intended measurable outcomes, whether they be social or environmental. And then lastly, I would say a category that can't be ignored today is shareholder engagement and advocacy and proxy voting. So the way I think about it, the term encapsulates all of those considerations. And some investors may have specific sets of values that may limit themselves to one or more of these, or they may be more broadly desirable.
So you were one of the architects of green bond strategy at Moody's. You're familiar with the topic. Let's, for the audience, do a quick sidebar on green bonds. People have heard about them. We've heard about the explosion in the market. There's so much money flowing into green bonds, climate-related instruments. Could you give us just a quick, you know, half minute on what green bonds are and why they've become suddenly so attractive to investors?
Sure. So green bonds have been around for about 12 years. They were first launched in 2007-2008 time period. So far, about 550 in green bonds have been issued. And green bonds are no different than any other fixed income security, except for the fact that the proceeds are earmarked for environmentally beneficial purposes. They are typically, in about 70-75% of the cases worldwide, issued pursuant to a set of voluntary best practice guidelines. Those have been promulgated by the Green Bond Initiative. And investors like them because, to the extent that they're concerned, for example, about climate change, global warming, and acknowledge that there is a need on the part of this society to transition to a low carbon economy, this is a way for them to reflect that concern by directing capital flows into these types of instruments that both individual and institutional investors can purchase by buying the actual bonds. Or in the U.S., there are now six investment vehicles that are available to them. Two exchange-traded funds.
Yes.
BlackRock recently launched one. And four mutual funds that are also available. They haven't as yet attracted a whole lot of money. It's about $300 billion, but they're gaining traction.
Right. And, you know, to me, the green bond revolution always seemed like the next step in sustainable capital flow. For a long time, investors were voting their values. They were either divesting or investing in companies. We had an index strategy. We were trying to bucket those companies together in ways that made sense according to certain ESG criteria. Green bonds, climate-related interests with their sort of impact focus is sort of the next step in creating an investable that is driving my personal money towards a value that I want to achieve.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk a little bit about, you mentioned the voluntary standards of the CBI or the Green Bond Initiative. Let's talk about how the evolution of ESG reporting at companies has come about. There's a lot of data in the system. It has flooded, a lot of databases and a lot of voluntary reporting from a lot of different places. Sometimes it's the methodologies are a little overlapping or confused. Sometimes the questionnaires are asking this for the same things in slightly different ways. Has this sort of chaotic gold rush of data around ESG, has that helped or hurt business? Is it easier for you to do your job and analyze market trends now with a mix of good and bad data in the system than it was then?
You know, as a research analyst and someone who spends a lot of time focusing on data and trying to make sense out of the data, I have to say that more data is always better than less data.
So, even more bad data.
Well, I think that's one of the challenges, is trying to tease out data points that are relevant and material to the analysis. And so you're quite right, Evan, that you've got lots of standard setters now. You've got SASB, you've got GRI, you've got the Task Force on Climate-Related Financial Disclosures that are providing some standards and frameworks. ESG rating and scoring firms,
sure,
like MSCI and others, data aggregators, rating agencies. There are firms that are now trying to harness big data using artificial intelligence.
Sure. Machine-based learning.
And
language processing.
Exactly. Stock exchanges like NASDAQ that are promulgating voluntary standards and metrics. Even asset managers are producing data, and the companies themselves are involved in trying to disclose how it is that they're addressing some of the risks and opportunities that they face. So you have a proliferation of data, and I think that's, as I said, a good thing, but it does place an imperative on anyone who's evaluating that data to make heads or tails out of it. And that actually is an opportunity for the kind of platform that I've been trying to create, because it allows me to mine it all and synthesizes for the benefit of the ultimate users.
Yeah, and it's really the reason why NASDAQ has been such an advocate too, because we feel like an overall higher rate of disclosure, quality disclosure, contributes to a more efficient market. And, we put out an ESG reporting guide, and the next one is about to be published, trying to counsel companies on a voluntary basis about the metrics that we find to be most meaningful. So if you are a company that chooses to engage with an investor, say, in a long-term discussion about value creation, this is sort of the language that you use to make that case. Mm-hmm. I want to talk, we've been tactical and specific, and I've been depending on your experience to get some very specific answers to questions, but I want to be a little bit more broad in this next question, which is about fiduciary responsibility. Who do you think, based on years and years in the market, and who ultimately bears responsibility in a company for ESG? Our understanding of ESG and the, quote, non-financial performance metrics, is that altering our understanding of traditional corporate roles in a way that is going to create a better company of the future?
When I think about fiduciary responsibility, I think about it on multiple levels, but one of which is the corporate level. And it seems to me that the board has ultimate responsibility for
the board of directors.
The board of directors of publicly traded companies, in particular, has overall responsibility for the financial and legal activities of the firm, to the extent that any of these issues, whether they be environmental, social, or others, in carrying out its mission, which, in my estimation, also involves taking into account the impact that the company is having on its community, on its shareholders, and on its employees, has this fiduciary responsibility with that regard. But I also think about, given that I am evaluating this space through the prism of investing and investment vehicles, I also think about fiduciary responsibility within the context of, in its role as a plan sponsor, for example, for 401k
sure.
plans. And
which has been a change. I mean, there used to be very few options for employees who want to invest through the 401k if they had a particular emphasis, fossil free or an ESG lean. I think that you've seen an explosion in the last 5 years of options for those employees. So I'm very glad to see some of those large institutional firms creating more options that are ESG focused for the way most people in America invest, which is through their retirement, their 401k.
Their 401k plan. Yeah. So it represents a great opportunity to achieve a number of different objectives. The uptake has still, it's increased. I mean, I recently read a Deloitte study that seems to support the notion that about 17% of 401k plans now offer a sustainable or responsible investing option. So that's up from what it had been 7 years back.
Definitely an uptick.
But I think there are still challenges, particularly because many of the types of funds that a fiduciary in charge of a 401k plan might actually consider for inclusion in the plan are relatively new. They don't have a long track record. Many have not been in existence for 3 to 5 years, which is generally the threshold
for... Difficult to backtest on ESG when you have no data to backtest.
That's one of the issues. And many of the funds that are becoming available are actually being repurposed. So the ESG overlay is only now being introduced into the way that the fund is managed. So yes, the track record is limited. And I think when it comes to attempting to apply an ESG offering in a 401k plan where you have a large employee base and it's a diversified employee base, trying to meet the varying needs of what investors consider to be their own sustainability objectives with a single fund or two funds is difficult.
Yeah, if not impossible.
If not impossible. So those are some of the challenges that I think these will expand in time, but the expansion may be moving along a slower path.
So in the time we have left, I now have you in the hot seat. Let's ask a few more personal questions, if you don't mind. I'm really curious. I'm not as curious. I know you a little bit, but our audience might be curious about how your background, education, career choices led you to where you are right now. There's obviously a sense of mission about this with you. There's something about this that resonates with you personally. Can you give us a minute or two on why you think you are in this place in history and in the market with this particular set of knowledge and skills?
I had spent the last 45 years working in finance and investment, starting out in investment management divisions of banks, moving on to a mutual fund research firm, and then for the next 25 years, working as a credit research analyst at Moody's Investors. And in the process, actually, also wrote a book on securities market indexes, which has always been an area of interest for me. At Moody's, it became abundantly clear that institutional investors were increasingly concerned about how environmental social governance factors were being accounted for by the rating agencies in their assessment of creditworthiness.
Is that because of notable failures of credit assessment, or is it just a growing sense of other measurements of performance and risk that were not being taken into account?
I think a growing sense that the marketplace as a whole, defined as investors, defined as not-for-profit organizations, other interested parties were increasingly demanding to see that kind of information. And while the rating agencies have always been taking these factors into account, because after all, what their role is to evaluate whether an issuer is going to repay their obligation in full and on time, and to the extent that, let's say, environmental regulations, for example, would impact the way in which they do business, right, and eventually cash flows and their capacity to repay their obligation. It was something that was taken into account for sure, but the rating agencies were not as transparent about how they were doing so.
And so, Do you feel like they were weighting it properly? Do you feel like it was just a matter of them telling us what they were doing?
I think it was more a matter of telling us what they were doing. And there are many factors that are taken into account, and those may not have been teased out in a way that the institutional investment community was beginning to express an interest in what they wanted to see. Right. And so I pivoted from what I was doing to lead an effort at Moody's to bring transparency and to add more disclosure around those topics worldwide. And really, that was the start of why I became interested in this. And it was also an opportunity for me to combine some of the experiences and skill sets that I developed over the years, especially around investing, which is why when I left Moody's, it seemed like it was an area that I could pursue and not only meet investor needs, but also, you know, satisfy my own desire to continue to be productive.
Henry, it's been wonderful talking to you. Thank you very much for your time today and for your continued leadership in the space. Thanks to all of you listening into this episode of Tomorrow's Capital. Thanks to our producer, Leanne Alfaro. If you have any comments or questions about the show, please drop us a line. We are at NASDAQ on all of your social media channels. So for now, this is Evan Harvey signing off from NASDAQ MarketSite in New York City.